Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, Sex with Simmery folks. You need to get real excited because August 20th through 24th, Philly Podcast Festival is back. This is the second time. Last year was amazing. Thank you to everybody who came out. And there are a ton of locally grown podcasts talking about all sorts of different topics. And you can come hang out at Tattooed Moms, which is on South Street in Philadelphia. Watch a live show. It's going to be amazing. A lot of people have giveaways. It'll be just awesome. So there's going to be cool shows there, including Sex with Timmery. We're going to talk about some sex, I imagine. There's also going to be like Unspoiled, Story Shuffle, Action Phase, Talking Nerdy, The Pincushion, Going to Hell, Stark Raven Mad, a bunch of other shows. There's so many. If you want the full lineup, if you want the schedule, you want more information, you go to phillypodfest.com and you're going to find out all sorts of stuff there. So get excited and we look forward to hanging out with you. Welcome to Sex with Timmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I'm very, very, very excited to introduce our guest today. This is Sonia. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure because we have been trying to have you on the show for a while.
I know. It's partly my fault.
Well, I'm just a big fan. I'm glad that we found time to work it out. So you are the producer, owner, and operator of Ethnic Kink.
Yes.
So can you just introduce people to what that means, what you do?
Okay, well, originally I was, and I guess I still am, a professional dominatrix. And at some point in my career, I decided to switch over into film. And, you know, I did a lot of film abroad. And when I came back to the United States, you know, I was just so exhilarated because I really loved what I was doing because they kind of had me putting together my own videos. Like, I was in charge of the set. I was in charge of everything, costume and what would go on. So I was so excited to bring this back to the United States, and none of the producers would have me. So I was, you know, kind of surprised and disappointed because here I am, you know, like fresh talent, and I'm ready to make my mark, and nobody wanted to hire me. So basically what I ended up doing was, instead of complaining about producers not wanting to hire me, I decided to be my own producer. And 20 sites later, here I am.
All right. What was the situation? Like, because you had come back from another country? Like, what reason?
I think it's because I kind of broke the stereotype and said, you know, we are marketable, we are kinky, we are sexy, and people want to see us. And I think a lot of other producers sort of caught on after that and was like, ah, okay, we see what's going on here. But, you know, I had to strike out on my own in order to do that. So I think that's what, I mean, I don't like to, I mean, that's not never really the first thing that comes to my mind, but I just couldn't think of what else it could be because I'm attractive, young at the time. And willing to work. I had a good work ethic, and it's not like I didn't have my look together. I didn't think it was because I had tattoos, because other girls had tattoos. So I didn't know what else to think at the time, except that, well, maybe they just don't want me because I'm black.
And it seems like,
yeah,
it seems like while that was like obviously like their fuck up, from what I've heard from some girls who, you know, they have like a specific production company they work for or whatever, they have specific directors that they always work with, that they often actually want that independence. They would rather leave that and go be able to have more control over their career. So it looks like you actually skipped a step, which is great. Like, you saved some time.
Because the other thing, well, you know, when I was a professional dominatrix, I used to work for the Den of Iniquity. They're in California now, but at the time when I was working for them, they were in California, Arizona, and New York. And I worked in a New York location. And they would fly, you know, select girls out to film. And at the time when they wanted me to go out and film, when my number came up, so to speak, and this wasn't the reason that I gave them at the time. I said, well, look, I'm in grad school and I can't do it. But my thought was, when they asked me, is that I'm not going to be pimped by anybody but myself. So it so happened that, you know, I kind of avoided. But I believe in paying dues, which is why I figured, you know, I'll go and work for some of these bigger producers, and then I'll make my mark, and then I'll do my own thing. So, yeah, luckily I did skip that step. But, I mean, I always had that mentality that, you know, that I eventually would do my own thing, yes.
So what are some of the differences between doing the pro dom work and then doing the video work? Like, how do those jobs differ for you?
The major difference between doing the professional sessions and doing the videos is that I control what happens. I mean, obviously fan input, you know, is a big part of it, but a lot of this comes from my fantasies and from my imagination and so forth. The other thing is, you know, it's on my schedule. It's when I want to do it. And I basically control how much risk I want to take in terms of you know, guy gets overzealous or whatever, and then you've got a trail of saliva all over your feet, your legs, or, you know, wherever, your backside. You know, whereas with video, it's a lot more like, okay, this is what you can do, and this is what you absolutely cannot do, and if you do it, I'm going to throw you out. Whereas when somebody's paying their money, you can set ground rules, but, you know, sometimes you go back and forth between controlling the session and wanting the person to have a good time. So it's a different mindset in terms of where the emphasis is. The emphasis for video is really much more on how does it look? Does it look authentic to the person? Does it have that good voyeur aspect to it with the person looking at it? Because what you really, you know, ultimately want in a video is you want the person to be completely immersed in it and turned on and imagining themselves even in that position. You don't want them thinking about technical things like, oh, you know, that guy, you know, I would have had a much better erection, or, oh, you know, I don't understand why that girl, you know, why couldn't she didn't seem like she was into it, or what. Like, I don't want them thinking things like that. I try to, you know, the final product to be as authentic as possible so that, you know, everyone is having a good time.
And how does it compare doing video internationally versus here in terms of like production or sale or any of those things?
Well, the main thing, the audience, the European audience, for example, they like a lot more of the formal sort of strict disciplinarian type, you know, with implements, and they want to see spanking, and they want to see riding crops. They want to see marks on the skin and that sort of stuff, because their laws, you know, in Europe, a lot of their laws forbid that kind of stuff. Sex, they can get. It's no big deal. They want to see the pussy eating. They want to see the ass licking. They want to see the guy have sexual access. They want the guy to be used sexually, you know, like fuck him and so forth. Where the, you know, so it's two different emphasize, whatever. It's just two different emphases. You know, in Europe, they're much more interested in the BDSM. In US, they're much more interested in the sex.
That definitely makes a lot of sense. Pandora,
because of our laws.
Yeah.
You know, sex is taboo here, so people want to see sex. There, beatings and caning and those kinds of things are taboo there, so that's what they want to see.
That's interesting. This is reminding me of sort of reiterating some of the things that I learned at the Feminist Porn Conference, like that the laws are really, really a big part of what happens to the content. Like, it influences what actually gets filmed, which then influences what people see and then get used to. And then it's sort of like the self-perpetuating cycle. So speaking of laws and how that affects what you can do and what, you know, you have to do, et cetera. There's a lot going on right now in legality that is affecting your work. What are some of the biggest issues that you're facing right now?
Well, the Mondo issue at hand right now is that Google has basically told the adult industry that your business is not welcome here. On June 17th, they sent out a wave of notices to producers. And I'm thinking these might be the smaller producers at that point just got notices, or maybe the hardcore producers got notices that basically said, we're suspending your ad campaign on Google AdWords. Hmm. And, you know, with no recourse, there's nothing you could do. On June 30th, so us, you know, more softcore and news type, you know, venues, we were like, okay, well, all right, so they're taking a stand against hardcore. All right, fine. June 30th came the next wave of notices. And obviously it was timed so that, you know, the 4th of July weekend was coming up and no one could really call them to the mat. But basically the notices were a little softer and they were kind of like, remove all porn from your sites and then you can continue your ad campaign. Mm. So if you don't remove any adult content from your sites, not only will the sites that have the adult content be suspended, you know, as far as your ad campaigns, sites that are linked to adult sites will be suspended as well. So basically they've basically said, you cannot have any adult content on your site if you want to continue your ad campaign. So essentially, you either gut your entire content and you have no site, but you can still advertise. Or,
which, or what would be the point of that?
Or face suspension. I mean, that's like telling, you know, and I said this in one of my blog posts, and I'm going to say it again. That's like telling, you know, your Black patron to your establishment or your restaurant or whatever. That's like telling them, well, you know, come back when you're not Black anymore. How can you do that? How can a person not be what they are? How can I remove what is my site? It's adult. So, you know, why not just come out and say, we don't want your kind on our servers anymore? And media in morality in media, you know, they're all patting themselves on the back, but about, you know, getting this done, because I think they're the ones that they feel are they think are responsible for putting this whole campaign together. I'm not sure what the larger forces are or why they made that decision. But you know, it's basically restraint of trade issue at this point, where you take an entire industry and say, well, you make that industry reliant on you, because what the other thing that Google has done over the years is they've changed their algorithm so much. Many of my sites used to be in the top 100,000 sites in the world. And after they changed their algorithm so many times, my sites got buried in like 6 million, 7 million, 5 million. I mean, you know, it's not obscurity because there are hundreds of millions of sites, but you know, to go from, you know, top 100,000 sites to millions, that's a big plummet. And through nothing that I've done wrong, except that they decided to change the rules of the game because they wanted us to rely on them for advertising. Google, for a lot of us, is, you know, a large part of our advertising, because with so much adult out there, sometimes out of sight, out of mind. And you can build a name, but you can't build a name if you're not constantly out there. Yeah. Just imagine, you know, a news network, you know, not a news network, but just imagine a station deciding to no longer run car ads. What's going to happen to these vehicles? Out of sight, out of mind, right? So, you know, it's sort of the same thing. And, you know, their response to this has been, well, you know, we don't want to infringe on the adult industry, but we want to make sure that people who are looking for porn are explicitly looking for porn. Which is fine if that's really what they were doing. But they have filters in place and they have all these warnings. The Huffington Post, you know, did an article on this recently where they had someone searching for porn and it took them several attempts, even with removing the adult filters and in the safety filters and all of that. Even with removing all of that, they still couldn't find what they were looking for. And that was their response when Huffington Post asked them, well, why are you doing this? Well, we want to make sure that people really are looking for it. So they have to be explicit. Okay, fine. That's one thing. But to just say to an entire industry that is, by the way, last time I checked, perfectly legal in the United States and in several, you know, countries across the world. you to remove them from your search engines altogether, which is, you know, let's face it, this is kind of where this is going, is troublesome.
Yeah, this is. I'm curious if this is part of Operation Chokehold, and all of the recent problems that a number of performers and directors have had, where because of pressure from the Department of Justice, which is specifically trying to weed out perfectly legal but they consider undesirable different businesses, so like lending businesses, ammunition sales, porn, they all get lumped in together. And so all of these porn and directors, porn performers and directors have been having their just personal bank accounts shut down. Mm-hmm. For no reason. Like, and it's just, you know, the
There's a reason.
Well, yeah.
Delicately, the reason that they're delicately trying to tell them is because you're in the adult business.
Yeah, yeah. But it's,
I mean, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, it's all perfectly legal work, but considered undesirable. And so the Department of Justice is wasting tax dollars on hunting people down to, like, basically make their lives more difficult. Like, that's not going to stop porn. That's just going to be really inconvenient for those people. Then they have to go find another bank. Like, it's not going to stop porn. And, like, why do we have any sort of interest in stopping porn or making it harder to find? Like, when you were saying that thing about how Google's rationale is that, okay, so their argument is we only want people to be able to find it if that's what they're specifically looking for,
right.
Which is like, you don't use that standard for anything else. Like, what is the problem with finding stuff that you weren't explicitly looking for with anything else?
Well, what happens is, and again, this goes back to this morality in media people, I think. I'm not 100% sure, but I think what happened is they probably mounted this complaint, and they said, well, children are coming across this stuff when they're doing their searches for their research for homework. You are coming up, with porn content, on their computers. And that becomes the hot topic and the taboo. And it's like, oh, no, we can't have children exposed to this stuff. Well, that's what Net Nanny and Cyber Sitter and all these other, filters exist for.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that that's the reason is bullshit.
Well, I have a really big personal problem with making the world the default to be children's settings. Like, yeah. I think that there should be some personal responsibility on the part of parents.
It absolutely needs to be a personal responsibility. Yeah. But they're not going to do that. Nope, nobody wants to take personal responsibility. Everybody wants to pass the blame on to somebody else. Like, a lot of people say, like, there was that whole rant, I forget that guy's name on Fox, where he was going off about Beyonce. Do you remember that whole thing where he was saying that she's a bad influence to young people and blah, blah, blah? And
what?
She doing that. Do you remember that whole thing?
I would have probably just tuned it out, so I don't actually remember
that.
But
the point that I'm making about it is that, first of all, I would like to think that parents would be doing a little better than allowing their children to worship Beyonce. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you have an issue with her bumping and grinding, change the channel. Don't allow them to have access to these things, or sit them down and talk to them and say, look, these are not the types of things that I want you exposed to. But, parents a lot of times, and I'm not saying that there aren't some producers who do black hat, advertising tactics, but, parents need to be more involved in what their children are doing, for one. But, on the flip side of that, to make everything about what happens to children is a cop-out.
Yeah, I mean, that's like straight up that, like, Simpsons Maude Flanders, like, won't somebody please think of the children? Or no, that's the Reverend's wife. Anyway, I'm mixing up my Simpsons references. Speaking of legal things that are related to the industry, can you talk a little bit about what is going on in California and AB 1576?
Oh, okay. So AB 1576 is a bill that seems to be flying through with ease in the state of California. And basically, it's called the condom law. And what that means is that producers of adult content will be required for their performers to use condoms on set for STD screening and testing and record keeping, and OSHA, that's occupational safety and health training for all their performers. And if need be, goggles, gloves, whatever else you can think of, safety precaution, they want used on, you know, adult sets. Of course, they throw in, they don't have to show in the production, but how can you have an adult video and not show condom use, right?
Okay.
I'm ambivalent about it because even though the industry argument and the mantle that the AIDS Health Foundation seems to be running with is the prevention of AIDS, and the industry is saying that AIDS transmission just has, HIV transmission just hasn't happened on set, you know, there are a lot of other things that you can get. You know, you still got herpes. Mm-hmm. You still got gonorrhea. There was a syphilis outbreak.
Yipes.
Okay. Yeah. And when they traced it back, so what happens is when there's an outbreak, when someone tests, and they're very good about this, but, you know, what happens when somebody tests positive, they stop all productions until they trace it back to patient zero. Mm-hmm. And patient zero was this one male performer. His name is escaping me right now. He actually just lost the case against a performer. But he had doctored his paperwork. He was positive for syphilis, and he had doctored his test results so that he could keep working and infected people along the way. On one particular shoot for a producer, the lesions were clearly on his peepee. And when during the interview, when someone asked him what's up with that, he said, "Oh, it's just chafing." So something like that could have been prevented. Say, for example, if the moment you get to the set, they say, "You know, come here. Let's test you. Let's see what's going on. Let's make sure," so that something like that doesn't happen.
Okay.
That way, everyone is protected. That way, it's a level playing field. There's no doctored papers because the person is afraid to keep working. If somebody refuses to wear condoms for whatever reasons, they don't have to because they know with a certainty that this person is cleared of all diseases today. Or if somebody does have a disease, that they make sure that the condom is available. So, I mean, I see both sides as a producer and also as a performer. You know, I've talked to a lot of performers that basically cannot get work because they want to use condoms, you know, and especially the females. It's like this kind of unspoken, keep your mouth shut and you're not going to wear a condom or you're not going to work. We're just going to replace you with somebody who doesn't mind not wearing a condom.
Hmm.
And on the flip side, there are people who legitimately have, you know, reactions to condoms, are allergic to latex or the, you know, the lubes and so forth. Or you get chafed from hours and hours because you have to understand, you know, to do a 15-minute or a 10-minute production, you're shooting for at least a good 30, 45 minutes. And that's a lot of chafing after a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can understand from, you know, from a performer's standpoint that she doesn't want to be chafed like that for, you know, an hour on end. But on the flip side, I see the safety aspect of it, too. So I'm you know, ambivalent and more leaning towards it doesn't affect me because I'm in New York right now. Mm-hmm. But who knows what can happen, you know, in a few years. It might. I don't know.
And it seems like one of the major problems is that this law was created theoretically for the purposes of protecting performers, but no
right.
performers were actually consulted. Nobody from the industry seems to have actually been asked, like, what are the dangers? What are the risks? What are the ways that we might minimize those risks? Like, there's no input from the people that's actually being affected, which is what makes me a little bit skeptical about it overall, because I, you know, like, it seems like good intentions, like, theoretically.
I mean, yeah, there's yeah. a fascist aspect to it. I mean, let's be real. It's very paternalistic. Like, well, we know what's best for you.
And it also seems like every time that one of these laws are passed that it applies to a specific geographic region, that the filming just moves. So, like, you know, you pass the law in LA County, the filming moves to Vegas, you know, that sort of thing. And like, that's just going to keep pushing, you know, it's just going to keep pushing filming somewhere else.
Or people could, you know, or you could, there are some sets that, let me just say this. Gay porn has been using condoms for years, and it has not affected their market share in the least. So, I mean, you know, a lot of producers make the argument that, well, people don't want to see it. Well, I don't know, because I think that art imitates life, imitates art. And I don't think that they've necessarily, yes, they haven't really spoken to the performers, but I think if they really spoke to a lot of performers, I think you would probably get 60-40, I prefer to use condoms if it's all the same.
Hmm. That's interesting.
That's just from an insider perspective.
I'm also curious because you're in a particular position where it's not just like, you know, vanilla porn. It's also like got the kink element to it, because there is also like a fetishizing of latex itself. Would it go over better because of that?
I don't think one has to do so much with the other, simply because, you know, of the emphasis on a latex video, for example, is really more about the look of it, the mm-hmm. touch of it, the feel of it. You know, it's shiny, it clings to the body, it's very sexy. Oddly enough, it actually started out as a barrier. Latex actually started out in the U.S. It was more leather in the European Union. Well, it wasn't European Union at the time, but, you know, in England and in Europe. It was more about leather and lace and stockings and, you know, those kinds of things. The U.S. is where the whole latex thing actually started. I can't remember if it started as, you know, this kind of sterile, you know, barrier between the skin, but not touching the skin and skin tight, but not exactly touching the skin. I mean, that's the whole eroticism of latex. I don't know if that necessarily applies to a latex condom, because if you've ever looked at the construction of a lot of these latex outfits, they have zippers that go from the belly button to the small of your back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to give you access when it's time. So it's kind of two different things.
Interesting. Yeah. I would love to hear you break down some other fetishes. Like, are there any that come to mind that you could explain to someone, like, who just, like, they see it and they're like, but I just don't understand it. Like, it just doesn't evoke that reaction to me or whatever. Like, could you be a kink translator and give us a few examples?
Okay. Well, give me a fetish off the top of your head. Let's see.
Let's go with feet.
Okay. So foot fetish is basically sexualizing of feet. It so happens that a lot of foot fetishists are actually pretty, what's the word that I'm looking for? Disease averse. Mm-hmm. And it so happens that you find, you know, researchers have found over the years that when there have been like disease epidemics, like STI epidemics, foot fetish has gone up, you know, right alongside the STDs. But foot fetish is basically, you know, it's for Indian men, for example. It's the one part of the woman that a man can see. Hmm. And so that area is kind of, you know, fetishized. You know, in the U.S., we have a lot of boob men and ass men because these things are on display. And, you know, in the Muslim, you know, and the Hindi, you don't see the woman's body. You just see her eyes, you know, maybe, you know, her face if she's young, but her feet, because oftentimes they adorn the feet and stuff like that. And so it becomes that sexual area. For men that enjoy foot fetish, it's really about just succumbing to that part of the body. They're not necessarily even interested in vaginal sex. They're cool to have sex with the feet, because the feet are the beginning and the end for them. I hear a lot of stories because I always ask clients, you know, where their kink gene expressed is the term I like to use. And I hear a lot of stories from guys of, you know, remembering playing under the table when they were little, or some aunt or some babysitter who, you know, gave them at feet and it imprinted. And so that became their sexual fix.
I like it. So do you have another one in mind, or do you want me to throw out another kink?
Throw another one out. I'll see what I can do.
All right. Let's go with, so this is coming to mind because one of my favorite people that's always at like the kink stuff that I attend in Philly is this guy, Carpet Boy, who has constructed a little stair up, like a stair step that he like just lays in. I just hit the mic. he just wants women to like walk across his chest and stuff. So I'm curious about like
trampling.
Yeah, like stomping, the crushing, the all of those things. Yeah,
I think it's really just, you know, about being an inanimate object. It's about women sort of overpowering you. You know, it's about, you know, oftentimes, you know, in societies, women are the ones that are objectified, right? Mm-hmm. Men actually like to be objectified too, and they come up with these interesting ways of being objects and being a human carpet or being trampled and being stepped on by beautiful women. Is just another way of being an object and being used by women, because I think a lot of men, especially in fetish and BDSM, they feel like they want to be useful to a woman because you know, they want to bring a smile to her face, so they want to be to amuse her, and so what they do is they come up with these interesting ways to be objectified and to be sort of non-existent, but to be there at the same time.
That's interesting. Oh, and shout out to Carpet Boy if he's listening.
Like, do you want a fetish or do you want a particular act?
Let's go with an act.
Okay. Let's go with face slapping. Why Ooh. Would somebody want to be humiliated in that way? Humiliation.
Okay.
Humiliation, which is one of my favorite things, is men are told that they always have to be in control and that they always have to be in check with their emotions. And so when you humiliate a person and you cause them shame and give them discomfort, it takes them to this place where they have to search deeper inside themselves for reserves. Can I take it? Can I do it? Mm-hmm. You know, allowing somebody to invade your space and to tinker around with you emotionally, because it is a very emotional thing to have somebody, you know, basically take you out of your comfort zone and do things to you, make you lose, you know, take away your control. Mm-hmm. It's a form of taking away control. And men, you know, have been brought up, you know, to assume the mantle, so to speak. And so humiliation is a form of taking that control away from them forcefully. They don't have to actually identify as submissive and do it themselves. So it's like I'm going to pretend that I still have the control, and you're going to take it away from me forcefully by acts that I will or you know, don't know if I'll necessarily agree to. And that's the excitement for them. The excitement is pushing somebody past their limit of acceptable behavior and making them do it and letting other people see that they're being manipulated in that way. It's a huge turn on for many guys, because they get to suspend that whole masculine paradigm for a while and just be whatever you want them to be, whether they like it or not. And they do like it deep down. At the time, they don't necessarily know if they like it or not. But that's part of the excitement, is the unknown, is the mystery, is the, you know, can I do this? I don't know if I can do this.
That's super interesting. And I'm like, I'm loving having this this explanation, because like you clearly have to understand the motivation in order to deliver like the quality product that.
And see, that's the thing, a lot of girls, I mean, I've been very successful over the years. You know, a lot of things, you know, a lot of girls, unfortunately, they come into the business and they think that all they have to do is be pretty and whip a guy and order him around. And it's a little more than that. You really have to have, first of all, you really have to care about these guys and, you know, these women. And you have to have, you know, a deep understanding of human beings. And you have to understand what makes them tick. And you have to have respect for them. Even if you're pretending, you know, because look, it's all fantasy and role play. You have to come at, with this, you have to come at this from a place of respect and understanding. It's a craft, you know. It's not simply ordering somebody to get on their knees and just whipping them. There's a lot of psychological back and forth. These are highly intelligent people, and they want to be tinkered with. They want to be pushed. They want to forget who they are for a time. And if you don't know how to do that, you're not going to succeed. So you have to really love what you're doing. Like, I really love what I do. I have fun and have had fun every day. And I wouldn't trade this for the world. But you can't come into this for the wrong reasons. You have to really love what you're doing. And you have to see it as a craft.
Yeah. So like somebody who's like a sociopath or something like that wouldn't actually flourish in this industry, you know.
No. And the reason that is because eventually, I mean, they may make some headway with someone with extremely low self-esteem. But most people in this industry, their self-esteem is pretty intact. And like I said, they're highly intelligent people, and they know when something is not right. That's why you've got safe words. That's why this is a role play situation where you can stop it at any time. And you have every right to be like, no, this is not what I'm going to do. You're not going to do this to me. Because people know the difference between good, clean fun and when somebody is just really trying to destroy them.
Hmm. So you have like a whole lot of cool stuff that you're involved in. I mean, you've got your website, you've got a radio show, that kind of stuff. So where can people find out more about you?
Okay, so people can find out more about me Well, there's ethnickink.com, which is one set of sites. Then there's thefetishwarehouse.com, which is another set of sites. I've got a Tumblr blog, goddesssonia.tumblr.com. I post a lot on LinkedIn, so you can look for me as Sonia C. Let's see what else. I've got the radio show Kinky News and Views, where it's basically adult talk for adults. Those are the main places, and you can always hit me up on Twitter, and which is Goddess Sonia, or you can hit me up on Facebook, which is Sonia Is E Kink. Feel free to reach out to me any of those places. I'm there.
That's awesome. Well, this has been super fun. I'm really glad we finally got you on the show. We were trying for a while, and
I know. Thank you for having me. You guys are awesome.
Yay! It was great talking to you today. And everybody needs to go to your site and evidently use Bing to do so together. Yeah. Google's being a jerk. So thank you so much, and thank you to everyone for listening. And have a great day. Hey, Sex with Timmery folks. You need to get real excited because August 20th through 24th, Philly Podcast Festival is back. This is the second time. Last year was amazing. Thank you to everybody who came out. And there are a ton of locally grown podcasts talking about all sorts of different topics. And you can come hang out at Tattooed Moms, which is on South Street in Philadelphia. Watch a live show. It's going to be amazing. A lot of people have giveaways. It'll be just awesome. So there's going to be cool shows there, including Sex with Timmery. We're going to talk about some sex, I imagine. There's also going to be like Unspoiled, Story Shuffle, Action Phase, Talking Nerdy, The Pincushion, Going to Hell, Stark Raven Mad, a bunch of other shows. There's so many. If you want the full lineup, if you want the schedule, you want more information, you go to phillypodfest.com and you're going to find out all sorts of stuff there. So get excited, and we look forward to hanging out with you. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.